Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol and in politics. As always, wish I was there. Very interesting, wish I was there. The governor talks about the need to recruit employees from outside our borders. Louis Wu, number two at Foxconn, talks about his vision. What is Foxconn's presence going to be 10 years from now? Mark Hogan, CEO of the Wisconsin Development Commission, promises again that the Foxconn is going to mean jobs for the underemployed and unemployed in Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha counties. And Gary Coigi talks about criminal justice reform and, well, let's just go to Wish I Was There.
But what I'm announcing with you here today is that we're asking the legislature to pass legislation yet this session that will allow in total a package of $6.8 million that we'll spend to use on marketing in these three pillar areas I talked about for bringing more employees to add to the workforce here in the state of Wisconsin.
10 years from now, I would look at that, you know, we would have a Wisconsin Valley. You know, the Wisconsin Valley would be an integrated software, hardware, and developer platform, right, to really to transform this region from a what we might have been seeing as a backward manufacturing to advanced manufacturing. So that I would see what Wisconsin would be transforming into.
But as important, and I've been pretty clear about this from day one, when I first saw this opportunity, I felt like and knew that it was going to be somewhere in southeastern Wisconsin. I felt, and I still do feel very strongly, that this is an opportunity for the under and unemployed in Milwaukee County, in Racine County, in Kenosha County, to be able to have careers that they do not have. And I would hope that 10 years from now, when we look back on this and the investment that's been made, we did it because it was the right thing to do.
Inmate 501, that likely a man, will be the first Wisconsin inmate sent out of state since the early 2000s. And today we're going to have a discussion, and I'm going to make the case for an ongoing public debate about whether we decide to send inmates out of state, whether we decide to appropriate money and build a new prison, or whether Wisconsin should engage in meaningful criminal justice reform and avoid those two needs.
Under the current system, if you vote in person or direct vote, your ballot is sealed in an envelope and stored away till Election Day. This bill would allow municipalities to adopt a policy that allows the ballot to be put directly into the voting machine by the voter, thus increasing voter integrity. I think when you talk about being able to actually put the ballot into the machine gives a far greater sense of confidence for our voters.
The violent sexual offenders are the best thing possible is they are have so many restrictions. The problem is they have so many restrictions. So when the TTY comes off in our dispatch that they violated their GPS and we need to go pick them up on a warrant immediately, and in the meantime, we send out an alert to the community members off our blackboard, a surrounding area, so people are on the alert for their kids and their welfare, and they're watching this person for 30 minutes until we respond. But that's the issue I have in regards to this.
Is policy was often considered the vegetables in the newspaper. Like, it's a thing you have to read, but it's bland and it's bad, and, like, no one really wants to read it. You really want to read the politics. Like, that's the dessert section. But you can have terribly cooked vegetables, or like you can have really delicious vegetables. Like, I had the best mushrooms of my life at Four Quarter this week, and I didn't know mushrooms could be that good. So I think part of it is on us as journalists to really take joy in those complex topics and to treat them that it's something as fun and interesting. And if we do that, I think our readers are going to have a fun and interesting time, you know, learning about these topics.
And I have a correction. That was State Representative Evan Goyke talking about the need for criminal justice reform and not his dad, former Senator Gary Goyke. Okay, JR, I'm going to lead with a rash of sexual harassment because Matt Lauer and Al Franken and Garrison Keillor. And so the issue was debated here in our Capitol just this week. And one of the questions was, should harassment complaints made against legislators or staffers in both the Senate and the Assembly be made public. And now all four legislative leaders have said no. And let's just read what Speaker Voss said. The goal of an internal process is to make sure that every single person who feels that they were a victim has a way to go to be able to report it to somebody, have some confidentiality, and have it investigated. Gordon Hintz, a Democratic leader, some of the victims may not want those details out there. Our policy first has been to protect those most impacted by the release of that information. Then yesterday, I think you reported Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Senate Democratic Leader Schilling basically said the same thing, correct? Yeah.
And what's interesting is, you know, we've been asking for just numbers, like just plain old numbers, how many complaints were filed, and we've been told no so far, have not gotten that information yet. So we've been asking the question, well, why can't we even get, like, numbers without details of what happened? But their argument has been that they want to create a welcoming environment for people who have been harassed or yes. think they've been harassed to come in and make that complaint. They don't want to dissuade anybody from filing it. I've seen some kind of mixed reactions from victims' advocates about that, whether that's a good or bad thing. But it does kind of raise a question of, well, what has happened here? What? Why can't we know if there has been an issue? Now, there's one high-profile case. That is Bill Cramer, a former lawmaker from Waukesha who was majority leader. He was accused of harassment after a fundraising trip to Washington, D.C. with Republican lawmakers and aides. He got in trouble, though, well, his legal trouble right. was separate. It's a separate sexual assault case at a GOP fundraiser in Waukesha County.
It was not investigated by the any officer of the ledge. It was not.
And the assault
The charge was filed by the Waukesha County DA, correct?
Mm-hmm. That part.
Two fourth degree sexual assaults, and he was convicted of those. But go ahead.
And he did not seek re-election that fall. So, I mean, they did move. They did move to, you know, remove him from leadership, and they're calling for him to resign, all that kind of good stuff. But we don't know beyond that, like, what else happened recently, or even the last, you know, 10 years. So we're not quite clear what else is out there in Wisconsin. But Robin Voss has been trying to professionalize the assembly while he's been speaker to make it run more like a business, if you will, kind of way. And this is part, I think, of that effort to kind of, you know, in private sector, you have sexual harassment training. You have, you know, classes about this stuff. You have directives from the leadership saying, hey, this is what's allowed and what's not. You know, let's be smart about things.
Yeah, and when I asked both the chief clerks of the Senate and the Assembly, they sent me copies of the training. Mm-hmm. And they also use a Department of Workforce Development standard on sexual harassment. So they say, hey, we make people aware of what is prohibited conduct and how, if you suspect you've been harassed, to turn it in. But none of this prevents any woman or man who feel they've been harassed in the Capitol from coming to a news organization, your organization, any of the newspapers, mm-hmm. and telling their story. So far, that has not happened.
No, but there also is a, you know, if you look at other states, there's an experience where people have been stories about, like, lobbyists, for example, female lobbyists who, like, they've been harassed by lawmakers, aides. You, in politics, can be risking your job and your livelihood, your career, if you raise a problem. So that's part of the issue in politics. It's kind of separate from business a little bit, which are also there, don't get me wrong, there are also concerns there, but this is a much different ball game in politics,
yeah.
and there's concerns about that.
But I don't have to tell you, since we both had a few decades up there, that building is replete with rumors, none mm-hmm. of which we're going to go to now, no. but sexual harassment has been an issue, but the public complaints will remain secret from now on.
Yes.
Okay, the governor, when he talked to WMC Future of Wisconsin, talked about going beyond our borders. And he announced a $6.8 million ad campaign, which the legislature must fund, which would do three things. It would appropriate $3.5 million to make veterans in the nation, outside Wisconsin, aware that the state has the best benefits in the nation, $3 million to market Wisconsin as a destination for young professionals. And he said, let's go after millennials who are 4 or 5 years in their careers. They originally located in Chicago, Minneapolis. Let's go after them. Let's bring them back. Let's make them aware that an apartment in the Third Ward in Milwaukee costs a whole lot less mm-hmm. than on the Gold Coast in Chicago. $300,000 for mobile job grants, which would go into Wisconsin rural areas and events outside the state. Big deal. You expect the money to be approved?
I talked to both the co-chairs of the Finance Committee this week. They said that they were initially optimistic about the plan. They wanted to see details. And talking to other folks this week, there's kind of a question of, well, why an ad campaign? Why is this going to make a difference? I mean, there are inherent advantages that Chicago and Minneapolis have over Milwaukee and any number of livability rankings that make it more attractive destinations for young folks. They seem to be banking on the idea that Wisconsinites who go to school here, graduate at the UW system, and then go elsewhere, when they kind of get to be that age they want to start having kids and have a family,
yep.
they will return home, and then they will see a place like Milwaukee or Madison as a viable alternative to what's happening in Chicago, Minneapolis, where the two kind of most direct comparisons. Will it be successful? Who knows? It gives taxpayer money? Good question. I've talked to some people kind of go, why not put that money into schools or into colleges or into tech schools? But we have an issue in Wisconsin demographically where we are getting grayer all the time. We have on the state job site right now, any given day, 100,000 open jobs as it is. Governor Walker's talked about the challenges of filling those jobs. That's why he, in his mind, he's done things like trying to implement drug testing for some of the social welfare programs because he believes that's a way to get people into a job. The work requirements to be on social welfare programs, again, to try and move people into the workforce. Those with disabilities, he's focused on them to try and get those guys into
And all these things are about at his presentation at WMC, he even showed a picture of prison inmates mm-hmm. learning how to do some basic jobs on Wisconsin farms. Let's listen to a couple minutes of the governor promoting his new campaign to go beyond borders.
Instead of just bringing more employers in, which obviously we'll gladly take more employers, we got to use that excitement to bring in more employees, more potential people in our workforce here in the state of Wisconsin. And so it's not enough to just give speeches and talks. We've got to put a whole campaign behind this, both earned and paid media along the way. And again, we'll get into some specifics, but I want to highlight a little bit about what we're thinking about with these pillars. So the first part is targeting Midwest millennials. Some of the research you find, you know, in some of the verbatims, even comments about people just thinking, oh, there were farms here. We love farms, but there's a whole lot more to Wisconsin than that, and particularly from some of the exciting things that millennials are looking forward to or want to be a part of. We've got them in abundance here in the state of Wisconsin. Another good example is you think about this whole work-life balance out there that we hear a lot of research about millennials talking about, that it's not enough to just have a job and a home, but they want to have some balance in life. Well, part of that is we can make a pretty compelling case about the differential between actually doing things in Wisconsin, out canoeing or enjoying a concert or having a drink with friends, as opposed to being stuck in commuting time to and from work along the way. We have a comprehensive plan that's ready to go, and this last part is new, but we think it's worthy in relation to where we stand today and how many opportunities there are, not just to bring new companies into the state of Wisconsin, but how many of our existing employers want to add more people, and how we can give you the confidence that as you do, if you make that decision, we're going to help make sure you have the talent and the workforce you need to fill all that. So this should be a nonpartisan issue. Building our workforce should be something that's pretty easy for Republicans and Democrats alike to go along and do, and it augments all the other good things we've talked about that we've already invested in. But this would just be one more big step to going beyond just our traditional ways or even our non-traditional ways within the state to going outside of our state's boundaries to bring more talent into the state of Wisconsin.
JR, the governor in that speech said our unemployment rate is now 3%, mm-hmm. which is about two-thirds less than it was when he took office. Does he have to have a major campaign to look for workers outside Wisconsin? Is that kind of a backward recognition that Foxconn is going to have trouble filling, pick a number, 3,000 jobs, 8,000 jobs, 13,000 jobs?
Well, fill them from where? If you're talking about from Wisconsin, then it's a bigger challenge. If you expand the region and open up Illinois, which, you know, being from Kenosha County, it's just right across the border. It's not a very far drive to come in. That may be where you bring a lot of folks in. Of course, the more folks come in from out of state, the longer it is until we get a break even, in theory, on the investment in Foxconn as a project, right? So that's a challenge. We have a challenge filling jobs as it is in Wisconsin with those 100,000 open right now.
Yeah.
That's 10,000 more, possibly, to add into where you bring those folks in. So they've got to figure out a way to bring people in. And again, we're not producing enough people, young folks. I did my part with two of them. but we have to produce some young folks to replace the graying boomer generation that's getting ready to retire.
Right, having lost two of my three kids brain drained to Colorado. But anyway, new subject. Now, this triangle, this legal dance mm-hmm. between Tony Evers and Governor Walker and Attorney General Brad Schimel and his Department of Justice. First of all, Wisconsin Institute of Law, Law and Liberty, file a lawsuit. Mr. Evers, you're not following the new law that says your rules must be approved by the governor. Now, the Supreme Court ruled not too long ago that he's a constitutional officer and he doesn't have to. So this is a new challenge. But now, Mr. Evers, Governor Walker said, Mr. Evers, you may not use your chief counsel. Mm-hmm. You will use Mr. Schimel and his Department of Justice. So then, Mr. Evers, then, I just have two words to say to Scott Walker's handpicked lawyers, meaning Attorney General Schimel, you're mm-hmm. fired. In a democracy, the governor doesn't get to choose his opponents on the ballot or his opponents' lawyers in court. And the top assistant to Attorney General Schimel says, whether Superintendent Evers likes it or not, the state of Wisconsin is the actual defendant. His personal opinions as to what the law is or should be will have no bearing on the Attorney General's power or ethical duty to represent the state. Now there's a motion mm-hmm. before the Supreme Court. Explain that.
So you kind of have to kind of step back and break it down into pieces. So in 2011, Republicans passed a law. It's called the rulemaking process. So when they pass laws in Wisconsin, right, agencies have to fill in the details. Lawmakers don't cover every single scenario. They have to have some kind of implementation tool. It's administrative rules process. Lawmakers said, in this process, all agencies are subjected to it. You have to do this whole new kind of like hurdles to get administrative rules done. What that included Department of Public Instruction. There was a lawsuit filed by teachers' unions and parents and others saying that's not right.
That
because
infringes on the powers of a constitutional officer.
And the Supreme Court agreed, saying you cannot have the DPI superintendent subject that agency's administrative rules to the governor because they are constitutionally separately elected officers. Now, that decision, though, had all kinds of concurring opinions. So Will, Wisconsin Law and Liberty, is saying is a fractured opinion. There's no clear directive in their minds. This new law approved this year,
called the RAINS Act,
similar thing, and a new layer of hurdles go through as agencies to pass administrative rules, especially as it costs a lot of money. DPI has been saying we're not paying attention to this rule because here's this decision from last year saying we don't have to.
And that's the precedent.
Now, this is why I bring this up. In 2011, that lawsuit, DOJ argued DPI should be subject to the administrative rules process laid out in law. DPI said, no, we shouldn't. They were involved in that lawsuit. These unions were involved. So Evers is saying you have an ethical problem if you're Brad Schimel because you argued against our point last time, and now you're trying to represent us and our viewpoint, which conflict.
Why should I go to court with a lawyer who has already stated in the 2011 lawsuit mm-hmm. he takes the position of Will, Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty?
And DOJ is saying we often have conflicts with agencies, but we have the power statutorily to represent state agencies. That's our role. Represent the state, quote unquote. This is the bottom line. Before we ever get to the heart of the Will lawsuit about whether this applies, we're going to have a legal fight over who gets to represent Tony Evers and DPI. That's one thing to watch right there. Will did a conference call this week with Rick Eisenberg, the president. He kind of made the comment of, at some point, some way, he's fairly confident DPI will have a voice in this lawsuit. The question is, who's going to provide it? You know, their viewpoint will get covered. The question is, who will do it? You know, will the Supreme Court say, okay, you know, DOJ, you can't be their attorney? Will the Supreme Court say, no, you are their attorney, but DPI, you can file a friend of the court brief. I'm not sure how it's going to work out. But at some point, that viewpoint will come out. Politically now,
I was going to ask that. Has the governor given Tony Evers, a Democratic candidate for governor, a viable, a decent campaign issue?
Good question. I asked
it's
a lot
complex.
Of people this week, like, is this a big deal? And they're like, nobody's really voters don't get excited about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, your bases, yeah, they get inflamed about these kinds of things. But the average voter at home is not paying attention to whose lawyer is representing who in a lawsuit like this. It does give Tony Evers, however, a way to raise money, right? He's
yep.
not fundraising appeals
you
right away.
You and I have seen his fundraising letters.
Saying they're trying to stop me and silence me. You know, this is a way to get the base engaged. And it's been kind of a sleep, other than like everybody's running for the nomination right now on the
yep.
Democratic side.
Yep.
I think kind of a sleepy race. We're also, you know, 11 months out from the primary, but there hasn't been a whole lot of action with the candidate. This gives Evers a way to kind of get a little publicity, throw out some fundraising appeals, and kind of remind people, hey, I'm not here running for governor.
Okay, and let's end it with this way. I'm going to admit, I don't know the next. Has there been a court date set to your knowledge?
Not that I saw. There have been a couple filings this week. So DPI said DOJ wants you off the case. DOJ said no way. DPI went to Supreme Court on Wednesday or Thursday saying, okay, we want to get this taken care of. Right. There's now a separate action apparently pending in circuit court, so it's going to be mess legally for a while.
But it's going to be a see you in court type thing. This week, an assembly task force on fixing the foster care system made some recommendations that are pretty interesting. They'd like a 5-county, 3-year pilot program to provide lawyers for parents who are on the verge of potentially losing their children to the foster care system. They would like the UW and Technical College tuition remission, for eligible foster care youth. $400,000 to help retain foster parents and reimburse their expenses. A couple more items. $250,000 to expand the number of special advocates for children. And some mental health records would be disclosed to foster care parents. Speaker Voss said this is a top priority.
We interviewed him a week or two ago, and he said this is one of his top priorities for the spring session. Now, that always becomes an issue of is a top priority for the Senate.
Yep.
From what we understand from the interviews that I did, the Assembly will be in January and February and then probably be done. The Senate's planning one day, at least last time I talked to them, one day in January, one in February, one in March. So they have opportunities, if these bills pass early, to take them up. Does the Senate have buy-in on this?
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to watch, see that happen.
Okay, and just a minute from the video of the news conference at which the recommendations were announced. The two co-chairs, Republican Pat Snyder, goes first. And then Democrat Steve Doyle of La Crosse talks about Clark County incidents where emergency workers in hazmat suits have to take children away from their parents. A minute from that news conference.
I do know that a lot of the counties are experiencing trying to find foster families to be able to come forward and open up their homes to these kids. And not only that, but some of the foster families, like in my county, Marathon County, they're starting to get older, and they're retiring out of the foster care system. So there needs to be a great effort to incentivize a lot of the younger adults of maybe opening up their homes and helping these kids normalize their lives.
The drugs are getting into the kids' system, and some of the people who testified said that, you know, in fact, they have tested kids that have been at levels as high or higher than the parents for the drugs in their system. That's the kind of thing that we're facing. And here, listen to this. The social workers in Clark County, when they go out to those calls where they know there's a meth situation involved, they wear hazmat suits. Now, can you imagine the trauma to a kid being taken from his or her mother's arms by a person in a hazmat suit? That's the situation that we're dealing in the state of Wisconsin today.
J.R., Louis Wu is number two to Terry Gao of Foxconn, one of the top 10 or top 16 biggest corporations. And for the first time, I found it interesting at this WMC conference, he laid out his vision for Wisconsin. And 107 square foot LCD displays, well, I'm not doing very well in summarizing it. Let's listen to what Dr. Louis Wu told the WMC confab about what will actually be built in Wisconsin, if it all comes together. Dr. Louis Wu.
When people look at Foxconn, they sometimes mistaken us only as a manufacturer. In fact, we are one of the largest patent holders in terms of IT patents. We currently own 80,000 patents and about 142,000 in filing. But let me come back to what we are trying to bring to Wisconsin. And let me categorically say that, you know, we are not building television here in Wisconsin. Or to be more precise, we are not only building television in Wisconsin. The biggest and the most capital intensive investment we have is close to $10 billion to build a generation 10.5 TFT LCD fab. Basically produces the largest display. The largest display is about 107 square feet, which is equivalent to the size of two king-size beds. So the annual product of which, when we are rolling out in about 3-4 years from now, after the fab is being built, would be about 7 million units a year, which you put it together would cover about one-third the area of the city of Milwaukee. So what that means is that it would provide us with the opportunity to see things which is really beyond our naked eyes today. So that would enable medical doctors to do remote consultations or joint consultations, right? At the same time, to do nanosurgery to reduce the blood loss by at least 90%. But at the same time, it's very clear to us is that to continue to recruit talents and to retain talents, we must maintain and even increase the pristine of Wisconsin, right? It's the beauty of Wisconsin. It's the environmental friendly Wisconsin. So it's just like wherever we go, we are upholding the highest standard of environmental protection where the community demands, and we should go beyond that. So this is in our commitment. But that's just part of it. I think the most exciting part is to work with the Wisconsin companies, be it startups, small or large ones, to build vertical solutions on this, what we call the 8K plus 5G ecosystem. That's the excitement.
Yeah, I just want to come back to some of the things that he said. Louis Wu said, if it all comes together in Wisconsin, they're going to make LCD displays the size of two king beds. They hope to make assemble 7 million units a year, which Louis Wu says is equal to one-third of the landmass of Milwaukee. And the goal here would be LCD units that would allow medical consultations and nanosurgeries that would avoid 90% of the blood loss. But here was, I'm just repeating what he said, but it's so important. The debate over whether Foxconn is going to ruin the environment in southeast Wisconsin. And he said no, that Foxconn's goal is to maintain and preserve Wisconsin's pristine environment. Now, he's laid down some very ambitious benchmarks that this company can be judged by in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And Racine County and the Mount Pleasant just signed this major deal, more than $700 million in aid.
I am $3 billion to $3.7, $3.8 billion roughly.
Right. So I'm kind of stunned. The reason that that we're dwelling on this is because this is the first time after the contract is signed, a Foxconn executive, number two, comes in and actually lays out his vision. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, for the critics of this deal, they're still saying prove it. Because look what Foxconn's done elsewhere, and so they laid a lot of big promises there, and things didn't quite come through. So they're still not quite convinced.
Including the state of Pennsylvania problem.
Yes.
And by the way, Louis Wu at WMC was not asked if this deal gets done if Governor Walker is not reelected. But I'm sorry, go ahead. He was not asked that.
No, and that's what this is going to be a campaign issue next year for Governor Walker. We talked before. If there is progress, if we can see progress, like walls going up, foundations poor, people being hired, that's good for Walker. If there's not, if things bog down for some reason, that'll inflame those questions about Foxconn deal.
Yeah. Part of it is, who are they going to hire? And this workforce issue is huge in terms of Foxconn staffing out, in addition to building this huge plant. Okay.
That's why they put more engineering capacity for a university system in the budget this year, trying to turn out those engineers we're going to need to work at that plant.
Including a new engineering school at UW-Platteville. Okay, what stock picks?
So rising private property rights, Governor Walker signed like, I don't know how many dozen bills this week. One of the high-profile ones, there is this case out in western Wisconsin. We call them substandard lots, right? Yeah, they don't confirm a certain...
Went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Supreme Court said, sorry, family, you can't do what you want to do. This basically paves the way for them to do it. It also enshrines other rules in state law, including, for example, state Supreme Court case, but if you want to challenge your assessment, you can't be penalized if you don't let the assessor into your house anymore. That's in the bill to enshrine that. So, you know, a win for private property rights if you're somebody's into that kind of stuff.
Okay, mixed.
So, Kevin Nicholson, so we've been hearing for a couple weeks about rumblings of his campaign.
This is a Republican U.S. Senate candidate.
If something's going to change. And so this, we get the announcement that he is moving toward a new campaign team. Now, sources tell me that the people who kind of helped get him off the ground are going over to the super PAC that was backing him. There's a cooling off period of like 120 days. So that's official for another several months. But Nicholson's got a new campaign team. The question is kind of like, why? You know, if you're a Nicholson backer, you want to put a spin on it, you say, hey, this is just a part about building out the team. He added his media folks, his polling people. That's just part of it. He also got a really good general consultant, Axiom, which is a national firm that has a winning reputation. I worked on Ted Cruz's presidential campaign last year, which won Wisconsin's primary. So those are some good things for him. Also, Jim Clouser, longtime aide to Tommy Thompson, is now his honorary campaign chair.
Ooh.
Kevin Nicholson has been trying to make inroads with Wisconsin conservatives. This is maybe a sign from the old guard of it's okay to come in if you want to. But there are always questions when you change your campaign of, like, why? Is this a shakeup? Is the candidate unhappy with the foundation that was laid? What we've been seeing so far from Nicholson, a lot of it has been him struggling to take inroads with Wisconsin Republicans because they don't really know him. They know Leah Vukmir. Like, they're comfortable with her. They're not quite sure about him. So is this trying a different tactic?
But they use the R word on her, right?
Oh, Club for Growth did. That's an interesting point that you say that, because Club for Growth, which is backing Nicholson.
Well, let's say what the R word is.
Republican
name only, excuse me.
So Club for Growth put a fundraising pitch saying, Leah Vukmir, we have a chance for Kevin Nicholson to beat another rhino. Well, even though Kevin didn't say that, his campaign didn't say it, his supporter did. There's mud on his shoes from that, because that inflamed conservatives in Wisconsin saying, hey, look, we know Leah Vukmir. She has a pure conservative record. You can't knock her as a rhino. And the issue is, one of the issues is that you have Talk Radio Milwaukee, which has been trying to kind of maintain this veneer of impartiality in this primary. It's starting to kind of fade away as they see stuff like that saying, you can't attack one of our own. So the question is, new campaign team is, okay, you're new in Wisconsin. How are you going to thread the needle of differentiating Kevin from Leah Vukmir without attacking her in a way that, you know, drives the base crazy and makes them say, okay, look, you can't do that to one of ours.
Yeah, kind of so thing. It's mixed. Okay, falling.
The deer hunt, in 2000, Steve, we had more than 500,000 deer harvested in the fall gun hunt.
2000?
Yep. We had fewer than 200,000 this time.
Okay.
What's happened since then? Chronic wasting disease in 2001. Mm-hmm. Demographic changes. People are not hunting as much as they used to. Yeah. So, you know, you always have weather. Weather's always an issue in the deer hunt. Whether it's good or bad contributes to it. There have been a number of changes that have been implemented to try and bring more people out. The big one this year was what? Dropping the minimum age for the mentor hunting program.
Yeah.
So that did bring some kids out, and that may get them hooked to hunt later on. We also saw stories of licenses being sold to infants, kids younger than five. So the question is raised, was that a symbolic thing that parents did for their kids? Say, here's your first hunting license. Or, as a hunter, taking advantage of the program to harvest more deer. Either way, we have an issue with Wisconsin. This is a huge part of our, not just our environment, our economy, but our culture.
Yes.
And it is on this downward trend. I'm not sure I can reverse it, but it's been going down for a while.
Well, you're referring to the Wisconsin Public Radio story, which said that of the new mentoring licenses, four were issued to infants less than 1 year old.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Hey, before we leave, we're in a little bit of overtime. Ron Johnson said this morning what?
He is going to vote for the tax bill. I'm not sure when they're going to start voting on it yet, but he basically said he got a concession from GOP leadership on pass-throughs. They're like these limited liability corporations. They're not
taxed, you know, through your personal income
yes.
tax.
Got a better deduction for them. In addition to that, he's going to have a seat at the table in conference committee, which is when the Senate leaders and House leaders get together.
Work it out.
To hash out a deal. So that's good for him. I mean, he basically made a stink about this and got a concession that if he can keep in the final version is a big win for him.
Yeah, I understand. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for December 1.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.